Hello, podcast listeners. Welcome to End of Life University podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. This is episode number 368, and I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt. If you're not familiar with me, I'm a retired hospice physician, and I've been doing this podcast and writing books about end-of-life issues for a total of about 12 years now. The podcast, though, has been for 7 years, which is amazing to me. Time has flown by. And on this podcast, I do lots of interviews with people who work in the end-of-life field, in all areas of this field. And I do some solo episodes, which I'm going to do today. I'm going to share with you my thoughts on death education and why it's so very important for us right now to have as much death education out there as possible. And hopefully I'll have some suggestions and ideas for you and how you might step up and do some teaching in your community or wherever you are to help inform people in the public about end-of-life issues. So we'll get to that in just a moment. But first, I wanted to thank my latest supporter on Patreon, Francesca Arnoldi. Thank you, Francesca. I appreciate that so very much. I also want to let you know, if you want to become a member of the Patreon team, you can go to patreon.com/EOLU. When you sign up, you'll receive a monthly end-of-life news updates where I summarize all the latest studies and articles I find about end-of-life issues in the past month and post those for you in case you're interested in keeping up to date with what's happening in this field. And depending on what tier you sign up for, you'll receive some actual physical gifts like a Love Your Life sticker or mug or a Mind If We Talk About Death mini poster. So those are just some of the bonuses you can get for becoming a patron on my Patreon page. You can also support the podcast by buying me a coffee or making a one-time donation through PayPal. And you can learn about all of those options at eoluniversity.com/support. And so thanks in advance to everyone out there who has signed up or who's thinking about signing up right now. I want to mention for this talk today, I have prepared a little slide presentation. It's not necessary that you see the slides. You'll be able to get all the information just by listening. But if you like looking at slides and you find that's a useful way for you to learn and pay attention to things, you can see them if you go to my YouTube channel. So on YouTube at End of Life University, you'll find this episode 368 and all the slides there. You can tune in, listen, and watch the slides as we go. So once you're there, if you get to that YouTube channel, be sure and subscribe. I'm trying to get to 1,000 subscribers. The last time I checked, I had 780. So I'm getting close. I just need a few more of you to stop by on the YouTube channel and subscribe. And I really appreciate it if you would do that for me. So let's get on with my little solo presentation on why death education is so important right now. All right, we're talking about why death education is important. And this is an issue that I care a lot about. I've been passionate about death education for a number of years now. Given that no matter what area of end-of-life studies we care about, whether it's advanced care planning, if it's hospice and palliative care, if it's home funerals, green burials, no matter what areas we're working on, including if we want to promote death doulas in our society, all of those efforts require education in order to be successful. For all of them to work and make an impact, we have to be educating people in our community so that they will embrace these ideas around the end of life. So I want to talk a bit today about why this is so important, and then also how and where we should be teaching about death in our communities. So I want to go through some of the reasons why death education is so important right now. One of the first reasons is simply that we're living longer and we're experiencing more complex diseases like Alzheimer's with advanced age. And so as the baby boom population gets older and older, our population of the elderly is growing. Something like 10,000 people a day turn 65 from the baby boom generation every single day. And so the numbers are swelling of the elderly in our society. Therefore, the incidence of diseases like Alzheimer's and other dementias is also growing. And these diseases are complex to care for. It takes a huge amount of investment in healthcare and also in caregiving, family caregiving, to manage these patients. And if we don't pay attention to this trend and alert people to what's happening, we will be caught unawares without the workforce and the home care health force that we need to take care of these patients. So statistically, 55 million people are living with dementia worldwide. It's not just a problem in the U.S., it's worldwide. And the numbers are estimated to be doubling every 20 years of patients with Alzheimer's and other types of dementia. We do know that longevity has been increasing over time, even though it has decreased since 2019, probably due to COVID, most likely. Longevity here in the U.S. was 79 in 2019 and has now decreased to 76.1 in the U.S. at this time. Chances are it will go back up again. But nonetheless, we need death education in our communities in order to be prepared for the onslaught of many more elderly people, advanced elderly people, also with complex illnesses, so that we're prepared to know how to handle them. Another reason that we need death education is because medical technology continues to advance at a rapid rate. We're developing more and more technologies for treating illness, which is wonderful, but our ability to forestall death and keep a body alive has outstripped our willingness to grapple with difficult end-of-life decisions. The problem is we are working very hard to continue life, but we haven't put an equal amount of effort into accepting death and planning and facing a positive end of life. So we need education to help people be prepared for the future, to be proactive about the care they receive. And studies have shown that those who think and talk about death are much more likely to put their wishes in writing, to talk with other people about those wishes, and to stop medical treatment when it is no longer helping. And Dr. Jessica Zitter has written a great deal about this. She talks about it in her documentary film, Extremis, but also her book, Extreme Measures. The fact that we are able to prolong the dying process and increase the suffering that people encounter at the end of life. And that happens specifically because we haven't dealt with death and dying. We haven't educated enough people to be prepared and to be proactive and plan ahead and make decisions in advance. So we really have to do this work of educating the public and making sure they know what their options are for the end of life. Medical technology is great, and sometimes it saves lives and in miraculous ways, and that's wonderful, but we have to make sure that we're not misusing it and applying it to people who are dying anyway, and do not want their dying process to be prolonged. So we are also experiencing ethical and moral dilemmas about end-of-life issues. And that, again, is because we have technologies available now. We can place people on ventilators and keep their bodies alive for months and years. And there are debates over medically assisted dying, debates over when should life support be discontinued. And these types of dilemmas and conflicts are causing splits, sometimes in our families and sometimes in our society. There was a Pew Research Center survey that showed that 40% of Americans favor medically assisted dying laws and 49% are opposed. 66% believe that there are times when doctors should stop treatment and allow patients to die a natural death, but 31% believe that doctors should always do everything possible to prolong life. So we have opposing perspectives on some of these very difficult and challenging issues in our society, and it really requires us to speak to the individuals who themselves may be affected by this type of decision-making. People with life-limiting illness, people with advanced age who may want to weigh in and speak up for themselves and let everyone know how they feel about these issues. And rather than having families or healthcare providers arguing over what's best for a patient, how much better is it if a patient has completed their advance directives and told everyone what their wishes are and put it in writing so that it is a legal document? And again, people need education in order to know how important it is for them to do this planning and to create their end-of-life documents. So without education, we're not so likely to see people actually completing their paperwork. We already know now that some two-thirds of people say they think it's really important to have end-of-life documents and to do advanced care planning, and yet only half of those people have actually done it. So, which means about a third of the people who should have end-of-life plans actually have them. So again, we have much more work to do in order to educate people about the importance of end-of-life planning and teaching them actually how to do it and how to put their wishes in writing. Another reason we need death education is because of the high cost of being unprepared for death. And one thing that happens, I already alluded to, when we're not prepared, we don't know what we would like to have happen at the end of life or what kind of care we'd like to receive, we're much more likely to receive aggressive and invasive medical care, which may be futile, which may not at all help us live longer, may actually prolong our suffering at the end of life, and which will incur a great deal of expense. And so it isn't really about the money here. It's about the fact that people have a wish for things to be a certain way, but those wishes will not be met if they haven't been put in writing and if no one else knows about them. The second area of the cost of being unprepared for death are funeral expenses, because this is another area where people oftentimes know what they wish for. They know what they would like to have in their lives, and yet they haven't made any plans or told anyone or talked about it. And when a grieving family sets out to try to create a funeral in the moment, right after a loved one has died, they're much more likely to choose a more expensive service, to go in for all the trappings, the expensive coffin and flowers and ceremonies, because they're in pain and because they simply don't know what else to do to honor their loved one. So it's very hard to make the best choices when you're in that moment of crisis, whether you're making a choice about healthcare or a choice about a funeral. So we're more likely to go overboard, to go for extremes, to allow more healthcare than was wanted, and to perhaps plan a more elaborate and expensive funeral than was wanted. And these days, we know more and more people, when they're surveyed, are actually saying they would like to have a smaller, more intimate service or a memorial service. They would like to have some sort of alternative burial instead of the traditional casket in a vault in the ground. However, none of those wishes will come true if those people don't make plans and put them in writing and talk about them and let other people know what they want. And again, they need education in order to remember that this is what they need to do in order to have the tools available to them to be able to complete their advanced care planning and to know how to talk to their family members about it. And I tell the story often of my mother's death, which now was 9 years ago. And my mom, for the last 5 years of her life, had let everyone know that she was ready to die at any time, that she felt she'd lived a good life, she felt complete, and she was willing and ready to die if and when it was her time to go. And during those 5 years, she started planning ahead for her own death. She completed the five wishes document, all in her own handwriting, which was very sweet for me to have at the end of her life. And we had many conversations about it. She asked lots and lots of questions about what it meant and really talked through and thought through what her preferences were. And as her healthcare proxy, it meant everything to me to be able to have those conversations. So I knew very clearly what she wanted in terms of healthcare at the end of her life. As it turned out, when it was at the end of her life, she developed biliary cancer, which could have been treated surgically. And we made the decision to forego surgery because my mom's greatest wish was to be at home when she died. And in talking very frankly and honestly with the surgeon, there was a very large chance that she might die on the operating table if they had tried to do the surgery. She also might have died shortly thereafter of complications from the surgery and would have been in the hospital at the time of her death. So we made a decision to just put in a stent, an external stent, and take her home because that is what she wanted more than anything. And it was only possible to make that difficult decision for her because she and I spent so much time talking about it over the previous 5 years because we had gone over and over again talking about various scenarios and situations. And every time her answer was, I just want to be at home. I just want to be home when I die, and I want you to be there with me. So having that knowledge was so empowering when it came time to talk to her doctors and to have to offer them the reason why I was refusing surgery. And they understood it, and it made sense to them, and they agreed. If she wants to go home, let's send her home. But that, again, was only possible because she put it in writing and also because she and I had talked about it. And again, it's because she had been educated about the importance of having these plans, educated by me, her doctor, her daughter, the hospice doctor. So because of that, I was able to help my mom do the planning she needed, and she ended up with the kind of end of life that she really wanted. But in addition, my mom on her own also planned her entire funeral. She invited the director of the mortuary in our town that our family had used for generations. She invited them over. She did the pre-needs assessment and planned ahead. She paid for everything. And she had a little notebook where she listed the speakers and music, verses that she wanted, even certain flowers that she would like to have at her funeral and where she wanted the funeral to be held. She had all the details. She'd paid for her plot at the cemetery. cemetery. Everything was covered. And she had pointed out this notebook to me a number of times before she died, even though we didn't really review it together. I hadn't looked at it. It wasn't registering on my consciousness at the time that that's what we needed to talk about. However, right after she died, that notebook was sitting on her kitchen table. She knew that her time was short, and she left it out where my brother and I could find it. And we read it all together. We immediately agreed, this is the funeral we are having for Mom. We're doing whatever she wants. We're having these speakers, this music in this place. We're doing it the way she wants, to the best of our ability. And I dare say, had we not had that notebook from her and understood exactly what she wanted for her funeral, she would have had a very different funeral, and chances are my brother and I would have had a huge argument about what to do, because the two of us would have had very different ideas about what makes a great funeral. And most likely we wouldn't have even recognized what she would want. So the fact that she did all of that planning, all of that work in advance, was a tremendous gift for us. It alleviated our stress, because we were able to plan the funeral she wanted. We knew in our hearts that this was our last gift we were giving to her. We were able to create the funeral just as she had envisioned it. And that was huge for us as grieving children, to feel like we did this one last thing together for our mom. And we came together and we agreed with her, and we did what she wanted. And it was so beautiful, and it was so helpful for us with our grieving process. And so this is one reason I'm so passionate about talking to people about their end-of-life wishes, making sure they document them and that they share them with their loved ones and with their healthcare providers, because it is possible for people to have the type of end-of-life they really wish for to a great extent, if they have done the work of creating their plans. And to do that, they have to be educated about the importance of that. So I just wanted to make a big point of that right here, to think about the incredible service that you could do for your community, your neighbors, other people in your circle, if you help educate them about the importance of knowing about death and dying, about advanced care planning, about planning their funeral or their burial. Think about what a difference you could make in their lives if you help educate them. And one of the last points I wanted to make about why we need death education is because of the emotional and spiritual cost of ignoring death. I talk about this frequently. I have in the past, and I have some previous podcast episodes where I've discussed this, that we know that death is one of our greatest teachers about life, and that life and death are not opposites. Death is actually a part of life. If we deny death and ignore it, we are actually cutting off one of the richest parts of our lives. And I wrote down, it's on this slide for those of you viewing the slides, some of the specific issues when we ignore death and refuse to see that death is a natural part of life. We think that we always have more time. We assume that we will have as much time as we need, for one, to do the things we want to do, to say things we would like to say to our family members, like I love you, to visit people, to tie up some loose ends, even to do our advanced care planning. We always think there's plenty of time and we don't have to worry about it now. But if we are aware of the fact that we're mortal and that death actually sometimes surprises us and we don't really have control over when and how death comes, we're much more likely to appreciate the perspective that life can be short, and I may not have all the time I think I have, so I should take care of things now. I shouldn't put off or delay things that are important to me. And another thing that happens when we ignore death is that we forget that life is fragile. And this is also part of remembering that death can come at any time, that life is just so precious and we're so fortunate for every moment of life that we get to experience. And yet we often take it for granted. We are not even aware that it can disappear in the blink of an eye, in a single breath. Life can be gone. And remembering just how fragile life is helps us treat life with this great care, but also with love and gratitude. And I feel that changes everything when we live in that space in our lives, with this appreciation for simply being here, simply having the opportunity to be alive, to wake up every morning. It changes how we live from day to day. Another aspect of ignoring death is that we don't cherish our relationships, because once again, we don't see that the people we love are here with us for a limited amount of time. Death can come at any time for the people that we love, and we should be cherishing the time we spend with those we love, and also not wasting time if there are things we need to say and we need to talk about, making sure they know that we love them and care about them, or maybe healing some of the fractures that have happened in our relationship in the past. Another issue of ignoring death is that we don't necessarily appreciate change. In fact, it's kind of part of our human nature from the ego that we don't really like change very much. Most of us prefer to have things kind of stay the same. And to value change means we have to appreciate that nothing lasts. Everything is impermanent. Everything that's here right now could be gone in an instant. And when we come again from that perspective, that death is real, it's natural, it's just part of life, and that anything and everything can slip away in a moment, then we come to value the fact again that we have what we have right now, but we also get used to the idea that things do change. Change happens, growth happens, loss happens. We begin to learn how to deal with this constancy of change in life, that something will always be changing all the time. And we come to this new level of equanimity, in a sense, when we can embrace change and allow it to be there and not resist it and fight it so much. But that requires us to be aware of the fact that death is natural and normal and just part of life and just how things work. And this also helps us find deeper meaning in life, because we realize, you know, the things that I thought were important, the material things, the superficial aspects of life, those things don't matter nearly as much as the deeper aspects of life. The ability to love, to feel gratitude, to connect with others, to be kind and show compassion to other people. The ability to be creative and to produce beauty in the world. Those are some of the deeper features of life that actually have a great deal of meaning and value. When we know that life is fleeting because death is part of life, we are much less likely to become addicted to the superficial aspects of life and more likely to seek out the deeper meaning, because we only have a little bit of time. So we want to make that time count. And that's why we're searching for more and more meaning. And then the last issue of ignoring death is that we simply don't live life fully. Again, we're always putting it off. We're always saying to ourselves, oh, I'll go there tomorrow. Oh, I'll do that the next time I'm there. I'll see that person another time when I go for a visit. I'll do that later. And we end up procrastinating and putting off things that could bring us tremendous joy in the moment, because we don't recognize how fleeting time is, how close death can be, and we take it for granted that there will always be plenty of time. So we miss our chances to really enjoy the fullness that life has to offer. We don't live in the present moment. We're always either thinking about our regrets from the past or we're worrying about the future instead of being in the present moment and just loving every aspect of where we are right now. And so all of these, if we turn them around, there's so many benefits from understanding death and being aware of death. And a couple of weeks ago, I talked about that, about the importance of death awareness for all of us and how to have a death awareness practice. But these benefits of death awareness and death education, we can share with anyone and everyone, and we should share them. We should be doing whatever we can to educate those around us. So I'd like to think that any of us could, from our own vantage point, be a death educator in a sense. Maybe we do it in our own special way in a very limited field. But I think it's possible that each one of us, having awakened to the importance of understanding death, sees ourselves as a teacher with a message that we could share. So I want to talk next about where and who to teach about death, because this might give you some ideas. Maybe you don't envision yourself as a teacher for your community or as someone who has something to share, but I just want to talk a little bit to give you some ideas about how we might teach about death. And so, first of all, it's simply to teach about death at home. For one thing, we need to help parents learn how to talk to their children about death, also how to talk to their own parents about death and end-of-life planning. And those of us who have experienced it can simply share resources, perhaps, with parents we know who might like to know, how do I go about telling my kids about death? How do I help them deal with it when their grandparents die? What do I say to them? And so I've done a number of episodes on this podcast in the past about talking to children about grief and death. There are a number of books you can read to kids at various levels that deal with death and grief. And I also highly recommend using life itself to teach kids about death. Have a garden. Show them the garden every day, how it's growing. Show them when plants die in the fall, when their leaves fall. Talk about this cycle of life and death and how it's so important in the garden. Have a pet. And as we know, pets will die. We are most likely to outlive our pets. And that's another way to introduce death and dying. And it's painful, but it's another way to be able to talk to kids about the naturalness of death and that it is part of life and that it's something that we have to learn how to live with and how to embrace and accept. And when you do that for your children, you will have given them this amazing gift as they go forward in life. You will be giving them tools they can use because they will continue to encounter loss and grief, and they need to know how to deal with it. And when you walk them through grief over the death of a pet, you will have given them a little blueprint for how you handle it when you lose something that you care about. And that is a tremendous gift to have as they grow into adulthood. So doing that for your own children at home or your grandchildren, but also educating other parents, your neighbors, your relatives who have children. They may have questions. You may have resources. Show them some websites they could go to, like goodgrief.org. It's good-grief.org. Show them a book like Francesca Arnoldi's The Map of Memory Lane, an amazing, beautiful book. Show them other resources that you can find online about talking to children about death. Give them as gifts books that they can read to their kids about death. So that's a very simple way to provide death education at home for the people we love and care about. I think we need more death education at schools, and I would love to see classes for high school or college students. I was a guest teacher for a college-level class up until COVID started. Every year or every semester, I came in as a guest teacher, and it was an amazing, wonderful class, always filled up every year. And these college kids were incredible, so interested and so eager to learn about death and dying and grief. Many of them had experienced death in their lives already. Some were just curious. Some had almost a morbid curiosity about death and dying. But all of them were so engaged and so interested in the class, and it was wonderful. The teacher who taught it did a masterful job. She combined films, books, field trips like to the cemetery and to the morgue for these students. And she gave them this incredibly broad perspective about death and dying. And her class was extremely popular at the college level. And so this was at a community college. And so I would encourage you, if you have the credentials to be able to teach at that level, to consider, could you help put together a curriculum for a class at the college level or at a high school level? In high school, it's perhaps better to offer a book club on death and dying, reading books with students about death, you know, once a semester or once every quarter. Read a book and have a discussion group about the book rather than trying to get a class introduced into the curriculum. But there are many different things you can do. You can also do classes for teachers to help them talk about how to deal with a student who's grieving in their classroom. How might they address it with the rest of the class? How should they talk to that student? How should they approach the student? What discussions should they have? This is huge information that many teachers don't receive. So that's another possibility, to host a workshop for teachers of all levels, all grades in your community who might like to learn more about handling grief for children, if you have the credentials to do that. But that's so, so important. If you do, if you're listening and you would be able to teach something like that in your community, it would make a huge difference. And I highly encourage that. Another place to teach about death is at church, if you're a member of a faith community. For one thing, clergy members, by and large, could use some education about death and dying issues for their congregation. Many clergy members don't receive much information at all, shockingly, on death and grief, and yet sometimes they are the people on the front lines helping people deal with death and grief. So any education you gave them about what is hospice, what is palliative care, what's a home funeral, what is a green burial, any information you gave them would be tremendously helpful for them in the work that they're trying to do with their congregations. And you can offer them basic information without knowing anything about their religious beliefs. You don't have to get involved in that issue. They'll figure that part out for themselves. But you can simply tell them the facts about what is hospice and what does hospice do. And you can also offer them some ideas of how to give support to their congregation. Maybe they should have a grief support group within their congregation. Maybe they should have a class on advanced directives for the congregation. You could give them ideas of things they could do that might be helpful to the people in their church. And really, regardless of the religious beliefs, they'll take it or leave it. But from the clergy I've talked to in the past, they tell me most clergy members of all faiths are very undereducated around issues of death, dying, and grief. So if you belong to a faith community, that's the perfect time to approach the people in your community and ask if they would like to learn more. And that's just an area where we need a tremendous amount of work. Then also teaching about death at workplaces. We know that workplace grief is a big issue now. We understand that most workers don't receive adequate bereavement leave when they come back to work after a death. No one knows how to handle it. No one talks to them about it, including their boss. And no one is comfortable dealing with death and grief in the workplace. So first of all, let's educate employers. Let's talk to them about how they might make their workplace friendlier, safer, more welcoming to people who are grieving, who have experienced death and dying, and simply give them some information about the experience of grief after a loss so that they don't have unrealistic expectations of their employees. But you could also suggest you could do a little workshop for all of their employees on grief and loss as well, because people don't know how to talk to their coworkers after someone has experienced a death. And this is another great service you could do simply by talking to people about grief and how to be with someone who's grieving. And I think this would be tremendous and could make a huge difference in the workplace in terms of how we approach people dealing with grief. And how do we approach it maybe when an employee dies and the whole office is discombobulated after a death? What should an employer do and how to handle that? So again, I think the workplace is a huge area for more death education. Also, teaching about death for the service industry. And I know WPSU, who sponsored the movie Speaking Grief, the documentary film, they also sponsored a webinar for service industry providers on basically what you need to know about grief. Because think about it, hairdressers, bartenders, the massage therapists, those are all people working one-on-one with customers who are likely to encounter people who are grieving, and they need to have education as well about how do you talk to someone, how do you listen to someone, how do you support someone who's grieving so that they can provide better services and feel more comfortable themselves when they come upon a client or customer who is experiencing a loss. And again, in our society, most people are not comfortable at all talking about or listening to someone talk about death, dying, and grief. And if we could help people in the service industry have just a little bit of education, we could increase their comfort level a great deal. And then, of course, this is my passion, teaching about death for medical providers. Oh my gosh, we need so much of this. Doctors, nurses, all healthcare providers need education in talking about death. There's so much education that's needed, how to have conversations, how to deliver bad news, how to help patients make the best decisions for themselves, how to get comfortable with their own death and their own feelings of grief after a patient dies. There are just so many issues that need to be covered for healthcare providers. This is a difficult group to break through with unless you are also in the field. And if you are and you're listening to this, start brainstorming. How could you approach your colleagues and do a talk on grief or a talk on talking about death, getting comfortable with death, or even, you know, how to help someone complete their advanced directives, something like that. It is actually urgent. We really do need to make changes in our medical system now. I think it's happening, but we need all hands on deck in a way to approach this particular group of people. And then also teaching about death in assisted living and nursing homes, and I should have added retirement communities as well. I think this is a place where staff could be educated about death and dying issues. The patients and residents themselves, family members of patients and residents, there's just so much need for education there. One time I was invited to a nursing home and I spoke to family members. about death and dying issues, and the response was huge. They were so eager to learn about hospice, to learn about death, dying, and grief. They had so many really good questions, and knowing that their loved ones were nearing a time when they would need that information, they were so grateful to have it. So this could be another area. If there is an assisted living or nursing home or retirement center in your area that you could approach and ask if they're interested in any education, any educational materials, or any kind of a talk or workshop, you could offer. Sometimes they're most open to providing talks for family members because they are really eager to do good things for the family members of their patients and residents. And so that could be a good place to start, but you could also offer in-service trainings for their staff who themselves need to know about their own feelings of grief after a resident dies and how to deal with that and how to also be with a grieving family after someone has died. Do you see now, like, the ideas are endless here of who we could teach and where we could teach about death and dying. And granted, none of us probably have the experience or qualifications to teach in all of these areas, but I'm hoping of the things I've mentioned to you, you might have gotten a little bit of inspiration that there actually are places where you could teach. And maybe the idea is beginning to stir in your mind. Aha, I could do something for my Rotary Club or for my church or for my Bridge Club. Sorry, there's an ambulance going by if you can hear that noise. Maybe there's an idea just sparking right now of a group that you could talk about. And if you are not sure that you have enough information or credentials for teaching, things like Five Wishes has a facilitator's package. You can go online. They have a whole workbook for facilitators who would like to teach people how to fill out the Five Wishes document. The Conversation Project has these amazing starter kits that you can do yourself. And once you've been through it and read all the instructions, you can help lead other people through the conversation starter guide to help people just write down their values and some of their wishes. Those are some easy ways to get involved. You can also do book discussions, read some books, and books like Dr. Ira Byock's book, Dying Well, has a reader's discussion guide. Atul Gawande's book, Being Mortal, there's also a reader's discussion guide, and you can get a group of people together, read the books, and go through the discussion guide and simply ask the questions and have conversations about them. So you'll be helping to educate people by getting them to read the books and then to talk about it together. So those are things that almost anyone could do without having to be an expert. You can find ways to find things that you could teach that you will feel qualified to teach. Also, Willow EOL has their Willow EOL Educator Program, and I will leave a link for that in the show notes, and they provide curriculum for you to teach. So they are basically teaching teachers, and they help give you the information that you might need to teach people on a variety of different subjects. So that's another approach to it. In many of the death doula training programs around here, there's something similar also, helping you put together a curriculum to know how to teach other people. And so I wanted to tell you about something that I have made available. I'm just relaunching this, the Death and Dying Class Instructor Training that I put together to help people know how the nuts and bolts. Sorry, now there's a helicopter going by, if you can hear that, very loud. To learn about the nuts and bolts of creating a class or a workshop. So I'm not providing you with the content or the actual curriculum for the class, but I'm teaching you how to structure the class. So how long should it be? How many modules should you have? How do you organize the modules? And how do you market the class? How do you attract students? What do you charge for it? How do you write a description for the class? How do you write your own bio or your resume? And then even how do you create a syllabus? If you wanted to do a formal class, say at the college level, how might you create a semester-long syllabus? And there's some units on how to get continuing education credit approved for your class. So that's included in there as well as a bonus. Also, I have a little presentation on how to create a webinar if you wanted to teach online, and how to use PowerPoint, because I learned that not everyone has experience with PowerPoint. So I have two of those just little tutorials about creating a webinar and using PowerPoint for your webinar. And if you're watching on YouTube, you've seen my PowerPoint slides, which I've put together. So that is the Death and Dying Class Instructor Training. It's a self-paced class. There are just four modules for you to complete. There's some of them are a bit long, and there's a ton of different resources in there, places to go to look for curriculum ideas. There are a lot of worksheets where you can work on your ideas for your class, and some sample resumes, a sample syllabus that you can look at as well. So if you go to the show notes at eolupodcast.com, look for episode 368, you will see a link to the Death and Dying Class Instructor Training. The cost is just $59. I've tried to keep it very affordable so that it's available to anyone who wants it. But if even that cost is prohibitive to you, let me know, email me, and maybe we can work something out, and I'll try to create a few scholarships if there are people who would benefit but can't afford the $59. And then also, if you sign up for the Death and Dying Class Teacher Training, you can get a 30% discount on my other online class, Step-by-Step Roadmap for End-of-Life Planning. The reason I'm offering that to you as an instructor is that there's a ton of content in this class about end-of-life planning that you might be able to use for your class, and you're welcome to copy anything that's in here. You're welcome to utilize the format or borrow any ideas that are in here and any of the documents that are in here to utilize for your own class. And so there's a 30% discount on that class for anyone who signs up for the Death and Dying Class Instructor Training. So I'm trying to make it easier for people to be Death and Dying Class instructors. I would love to see all of us out there doing whatever we can to teach other people in any way that we can. So I hope you've enjoyed listening to this little conversation, and give it some thought. Let me know if you feel inspired and you would like to try teaching your own class, or let me know how you plan to be an educator in your family or your community. I'd love to hear feedback about that. So I'll tell you, as I always do, if you enjoy this kind of content, be sure and share it with other people. Let them know how they can listen to the podcast, subscribe and leave ratings and reviews, or also how to subscribe to the YouTube channel in order to hear my interviews and solo episodes. So until next week, remember that we're here for love. So face your fears, however deep and huge they are. Be ready for the unexpected, which life tends to bring us all the time. And love each and every moment of your precious life. Bye-bye.